This is a presentation from Narara Valley Baptist Church, a church that's desperate for God and passionate for people.
You should have received a little bit of paper that looks like that as you came in the door tonight. So if you can grab that now. And what I need you to do in a few moments' time, I'm going to need you to get into groups of 3 to 4. Now, it is advantageous to you if you're in a group of kind of mixed ages. So this is an opportunity to kind of mix it up in terms of the ages of the people who you're hanging out with. If you don't know people, if you don't know those around you, introduce yourself because it would be helpful if you had some other people around you. Okay, so I'm going to give you just a moment to quickly get into groups of 3 to 4. Groups of 3 to 4. Introduce yourselves. I can see Laura and Carolyn. They need another 2 people, preferably younger ones because they're both so old. Okay. So in groups of 3 or 4, and Carolyn's Laura case, they're kind of group of 2. Here we go. They got some of the young guns there with them. All right. So now you need to listen up because this bit's going to move pretty quick. All right. This is going to be pretty quick. Up on screen in a few moments' time, there are going to come 8 clips out of music videos, okay? Now, the music videos running in their order, they're from the 2020s, the 2010s, the 2000s, and the 1990s. Now, there's 2 clips each. Now, each of those clips is only going to run for about 10 seconds. That's all you've got. And after each clip, there's a gap of about 5 seconds, and then it's on to the next clip. What I need from you is, if you can, the name of the artist who's singing the song and the name of the song that they're singing. And so you'll see there, going down there, there's 8 blanks and it has artist or artists on one of them and song title. Okay, now, if your group, there's a maximum of 20 points. So you get a point for the name of the artist and a point for the name of the song. Total of, 16 points, correction. Not 20, 16 points. Now, the winning team... Talking about chocolate, the winning team this evening get this. And you don't have to wait till after church to start to eat it. Now, if there are 2 groups that have the same number, then you can split it up. And if there's more than that, well, there's a brawl that's going to happen over there to get the chocolates a little bit later. So without further ado, now, can you guys see the screen okay? Is this in the way? That's okay. Happy days. All right. So it's going to move very quickly. As I say, 10 seconds a clip, gap of 5 seconds, another 10 seconds, 8 songs total. Are we ready, Candy? We're ready. Let's do this.
Hey, when you told me that you love me, was I a fool to believe in you? When you told me I was special, was I dumb for trusting you?
Oh, tough one to begin with. Here's the next one.
Tell me something, boy. Aren't you tired trying to fill that void?
Down to the 2010s now.
You'll take me somewhere we can be.
Yeah. What's the next line? 2000s, here we go.
I can't breathe for the first time. I'm so moving on, yeah. Next to you, now again.
Brian and Sue look like you're hanging out for the 1990s.
I saw your face in a crowded place. And I don't know.
All right, Brian, now's your time to shine, mate. 1990s.
It's enough for this wide-eyed wanderer that we got this far.
Love can touch just one time and last for a lifetime and never let go till.
All right, I'll give you time to write that last one down. Okay. So, are you ready for the answers? We're already in our groups. Okay. Anybody got real confidence they got all 16 points? Anybody that confident? Okay. I'm very impressed, but here we go. Now, this is an honesty system, okay? This is an honesty system as to who's got the most points. Okay, so the first song was Ali Gatti, What If I Told You That I Loved You? Ali Gatti, okay? And the second song was Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper, and that's the song Shallow. The third, who was the third one? Taylor Swift, bit of Tay-Tay. Yeah, and it's Love Story, well done. Good work. Lauren's got at least 1 point. Good work. Okay, the fourth one was One Direction. And what's the song? Excellent. All right. Song number five was Kelly Clarkson, Since You've Been Gone. Okay, then we cross over the ditch over to James Blunt. Song six, You're Beautiful. Song about my wife. All right. It's a breakup song, then it's not about my wife. Sorry, sweetheart. You couldn't have told me that later, could you? Keep it on the down low. Maybe not favourite daughter-in-law now. All right, song seven was Elton John. Can you feel the love tonight? Excellent, all right. And song eight, going back to the song Titanic, well, actually the movie Titanic, it was Celine Dion, My Heart Will Go On. Okay, now, honesty system. Did anybody hit 16 points? So you got all the artists. Legit? You actually did. And this is not Ruben doing creative math. Okay, all right, well done, guys. Oh. I am very, very impressed. All right. So, as you lament the fact that you didn't get the chocolates, let me draw out what I'm keen to share with you this evening. You guys are a noisy lot tonight. Wow. Okay. So, all of those songs were love songs, or in the case of one of them, as Sienna reminded us, a breakup song. But they're all songs about the nature of relationship, about the nature of love. And it would seem that love songs, that love is one of the dominant themes for songs in our culture. So many songs on the radio, on iTunes, on Spotify, they're all about love, because love is like right at the top value in our Western culture. But it wasn't always that way. Back in the first century, when much of the Bible was being written, the New Testament was being written, in the Roman Empire, which just dominated the region of the day, love was nowhere near the top of the list. In fact, it was way, way down. In fact, there were other values that they had, things like reliability, discipline, honor, steadfastness. Those sort of things were the values, and love didn't really rate a mention at all. In fact, and there are things that they did back then that we shake our head at going, what on earth were you thinking? Because love was not a value. So, for example, and I'm aware of kind of some little ears in the room, one of the practices in the Roman Empire, if a lady gave birth and the child was not of the gender that they wanted, or if there was just one more mouth to feed and they couldn't afford that, they would do a thing called exposing the child. And basically, they'd take the child out in the woods and leave it there by itself to be exposed to the elements and to perish. Or there'd be a place in the town where they were at, and they would actually leave the child in this place in the town and just leave the child there to die. And we look at that and we go, what on earth are they thinking? Surely, why don't they love their child? Because it wasn't a priority. It was not a priority within that culture. We are aghast at that sort of behavior. But for them, that was kind of normal, because it wasn't the value that we have. However, there were some words on the lips of Jesus that we're going to be considering this evening, where Jesus has quite literally reshaped our culture to where it is today, to have love at a value. Jesus was bringing in something new. We've been considering over these past few weeks all things new, okay? that we're doing a new thing. We're just singing about that. And we're doing a new thing in our PM service. And Jesus was ushering in a new thing. In fact, if you've got a Bible there, if you've got a device with a Bible app on there, you might want to turn with me over to John chapter 13. Jesus is going to be speaking some stuff here that has quite literally reshaped our culture. In fact, I'm going to, with the light this way, I'm going to need some help right now from someone who's got better. Reuben, come here, man. I need your help, bro. I gave you chocolate. Now it's your time for payback. All right. I need you to read, because my eyes are getting old and frail. I need you to read chapter 13, verses 33 to 38. So it commences roughly there, yeah?
33.
You're literate, aren't you?
No.
You're not?
Let's give this a go.
All right.
My children, I will be with you only a little longer. You will look for me, and I will just as I told the Jews, so I tell you now, where I'm going, you cannot come. A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you may love another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples. If you love one another, Simeon Peter asked him, Lord, where are you going? Jesus replied, where am I going, you cannot follow, but you will follow later. Peter asked, Lord, why can't I follow you now? I will lay down my life for you. Then Jesus answered, will you really lay down your life for me? Very truly I tell you, before the rooster crows, you will disown me three times.
Let's show Reuben some love. Thank you, man. You're a good man. Jesus says there, a new command I give you, love one another. But was it really new? I mean, if you were in the Roman Empire at that time, it definitely was a new thing. Loving one another was a totally different way of doing life. But is the sort of love that Jesus was talking about there still new today? Is it different to all the sorts of love that were being sung about in the video clips earlier, given that love is such a dominant value within our society? I actually think it is. I think there is still something new about what Jesus was talking about there back a couple of thousand years ago. Okay, in the English language, we have one word for love, which is love, okay? However, if you were to go back, wind the clock back a couple of thousand years ago, back to when the New Testament's being written, there are in fact four words, because they wanted to kind of differentiate love. Because in our context, I say, you know, I love my wife, I love ice cream, I love our kids, I love this church, I love traveling. And we use that word to describe all these different things. But back then, in the first century, they had four different words to try to differentiate, to try to change it up a little bit on how we describe what we love. So, for example, there was a Greek word, philia. Philia, and philia is about friendship. It's about mateship. It's about hanging out with your friends. So Philadelphia, the city over in the United States, that literally means a city of kind of friendship, the city of brotherly love. Then they had another word, which was eros, from which we get our word erotic, which is about sensual or sexual kind of love. That was a different word they had. Then on top of that, there was a word storge, and storge was about the love of a parent to a child. That was a different kind of love again. And then the final one was philautia, which was love for yourself, which could be negative, kind of, oh, they're a philautia kind of person, they're really selfish. Or it could also mean, oh, they're looking after themselves in a positive sense of the word. However, when Jesus starts to walk and talk among us and he starts ushering in his kingdom, there was no adequate word in the language, even though they had four to choose from. There was no adequate word that would describe the sort of love that he was ushering in. Jesus had this love of another kind, this God-sourced, God-empowered love that was so transformative, that was so great, that was so awesome, that even though they had four words to try to describe this thing, none of those four words did it justice. So what did they do when there wasn't a word that was adequate? Well, they did a Google. They did a Google. Okay, if I was talking to Tonk, which I love doing, if I'm talking to Tonk, and Tonk was talking about my sermon last week, but there might have been something that he just questioned, he goes, what's that about? And Tonk might say to me, you know what, after the sermon last week, Craig, I Googled that. And everyone in the room knows what Tonk's talking about. To Google something means I wasn't quite sure, so I've done some research, and he's probably got online on the internet, and he's probably used a search engine like Google to check it out to make sure I'm not some sort of raving lunatic heretic, and I'm not. Well, not most of the time anyway. Tonks kind of not sure yet. But everyone in the room understands what we mean when we say, I Googled that. Wind the clock back to 1997. And if someone was to say to you, I'm going to Google that, you would look at them perplexed. You go, you're going to what? I'm going to Google it. What are you talking about? Why would we have been perplexed back in 1997? Because Google didn't exist back then. Google didn't exist back in 1997. But what happened was there was such a new experience that we had with the information revolution that's been taking place. The information that's available to us on the internet, the use of search engines like Google and that, we've actually introduced a word into our dictionary to try to describe this new experience that up until that time, there was no way in which we could describe it. There was no way we could understand it. We had a new experience, so it needed a new word. We Google stuff. And in the same sort of a way, when Jesus and the New Testament writers were describing this kind of love that he's talking about, they literally create a new word. And the word, the Greek word is agape. Agape. And what agape is this God-sourced, God-empowered love that is transformational. It changes everything. It's a love of another kind. It's a love that is from God to us. And it's a love that, as we're going to see this evening, that we are invited to share to other. But it is so different to every other kind of love that they actually had to make up a whole new word for it. They had to make up an entire new word for this. And Jesus, in the verse that Reuben just read for us, he says, as I have loved you, as I have agaped you, so you must love one another. You must agape one another. The same sort of love that I've been showing to you, I want you now to show it to other people. It's not a filio kind of love. It's better than a friendship. It's not a storge kind of love, a parent to a child. It's different. It's bigger. It's more impacting. It's more transformative. So the question then becomes, how did Jesus love? What are the characteristics of the love of Jesus that he calls us or he invites us to live out as well? Now, I could talk for hours. I'm not going to. But I could talk for hours about the nature of Jesus' love. I just want to highlight two aspects to you this evening. From this season of Jesus' life when he's approaching the cross, the Easter experience. The first one is that this love is greater than hurt. This love is greater than hurt. This love forgives. In verse 37, which Reuben read for us earlier, the Apostle Peter, disciple Peter, he's talking with Jesus, and Jesus is saying, look, where I'm going, you can't follow. And Peter says, you know what, Jesus, wherever you go, I'm going to follow you. In fact, Jesus, and you can almost hear the strings crescendoing in the background. This is one of those awesome, amazing moments. And if you're a videographer, you'd be kind of zooming in on Peter at this point. He says, Jesus, I would even lay down my life for you. And you're expecting this, oh, Peter, that's awesome. Man, I'm so glad for that. But the response from Jesus is different, isn't it, if you remember? Jesus kind of said, awkward moment, Peter. You see, before the rooster crows, before it's dawn, you're actually going to deny me three times. You're going to deny even knowing me three times. You're saying you're going to lay down your life for me. But, you know, even before the sun comes up tomorrow, you're going to actually deny me three times. And he does. He does. This friend who only hours before had declared his undying allegiance to Jesus, he drops Jesus like a hot potato. And I'm thinking that tonight in this room, there's probably quite a number of us who have had a similar experience to that. Maybe you've had a friend who's betrayed you. Maybe you're at school And it's really weird because at recess, this person was your friend, but by lunchtime, they're not, and you kind of go, what just happened? Or you're an adult in the room, and you've actually had someone gossip about you or speak ill of you or backstab you. And that hurts. Regardless of if you're 12 or if you're 82, that experience hurts a lot. But this agape love is different in how it responds. It doesn't respond. It doesn't respond with vengeance. It doesn't respond with anger. This agape love responds with forgiveness. So in Jesus' story, okay, Peter denies Jesus three times. Jesus goes to the cross, he dies, and then he's risen again. I'm sorry if I'm doing a spoiler alert for Easter that's coming up real soon. But I think you've probably heard the message before. I know, right? But there's this beautiful moment after the resurrection when Jesus encounters Peter again. I think it's probably the next time they see each other or the next time they actually interact with each other. And Peter and his mates go back to what they know best, which is fishing. And they're out on the Sea of Galilee, they're fishing. And then in the morning, just as the sun is coming up, they spy out, they see this guy on the shore and he's got a little campfire going and he's cooking some fish and baking some bread over the hot coals. And as the sun rises a little bit more, they look out there and Peter goes, that's Jesus, that's Jesus. And without thinking, Peter dives into the water and starts swimming to shore. And I've always wondered what Peter was thinking as he's dove into the water, as he's swimming to shore. I think that he's probably about five or six strokes in and he goes, oh my goodness, what's Jesus going to say when I reach him on the shore? And maybe he started swimming slower at that point while he's thinking, well, he's trying to process it and going through, what am I going to say to Jesus? The rest of the guys pull up the nets and they come in as well and Jesus serves them this bread and the fish there that he's been cooking and he pulls Peter aside. And this guy who had just denied Jesus three times after declaring that he was going to give his life for Jesus, he's standing there in front of Jesus. And Jesus says, Peter, do you love me? And he says, yes, Lord, I do. And he says to Peter, feed my sheep. Now care for this new church that is being born. And he's a second time, he says, Peter, do you love me? And he says, yes, Lord, you know that I do. He says, feed my sheep. And a third time, which corresponds to the number of times that Peter had denied him, he says, Peter, do you love me? And he says, yes, Lord, I love you. And he says, feed my sheep. And there is this incredible, powerful forgiveness that Jesus extends to this guy. And in fact, Peter goes on to become one of the key leaders in the church. Because agape love is greater, is more powerful, is more transformative than any other kind of experience of love. Agape love doesn't allow bitterness to take root in our lives. It doesn't give that person who's hurt us free rent space in our head where we keep going over and over again how badly they've hurt us and how terrible they are. Agape love does something and it forgives. It forgives. And in doing so, it continues the work of transformation in the person who demonstrates that love and in the life of the person who's on the receiving end. And I think tonight there may be some of us who we go, could God ever forgive me? I've screwed up some stuff in the past. Is there forgiveness for me too? And I want to say to you tonight, yes, there is. And the reason I say that is because in the scriptures it says God is love. God is agape. That's his stock in trade. That's how God rolls. That's what he does. And equally, he invites you as a disciple of his to show that love to others. And so I wonder if for some of us tonight, when I say, hey, I want to encourage you to forgive, for some of us in the room tonight, there's just a face that comes straight up. in our consciousness. You want me to forgive him? You want me to forgive her? Are you serious? For some of us, if the wound runs deep, that's going to take some time. I'm not saying, well, just forgive and bang, it's all done. There's going to be a need to forgive and to keep on choosing to forgive. But there is a God-sourced, God-empowered love that resides within you that is going to transform you. And I believe in faith it's probably going to transform them as well. But you're invited as a disciple of Jesus to forgive, to live a different way. That's the first one. This love is greater than hurt. It forgives. And secondly and briefly, this love is greater than me. This love is selfless. So a little while after Peter makes his big declaration of how he's going to lay down his life for Jesus, we read there that Jesus and the disciples, they go down, they travel about, walk about 15 minutes down the road to a place called the Garden of Gethsemane. It's a little garden, a little olive grove there. And Jesus starts to pray. And Jesus prays the same thing three times. He says, Father, if there is any way that I don't have to go to the cross, the language he uses, he says, if there's any way this cup can pass from me, if there's any other way but having nails driven into my hands and feet and a spear thrust into my side, if there's any other way than a crown of thorns being placed upon my head and being mocked and jeered, if there's any other way than receiving the lashes that came from the whip, if there's any other way than carrying the cross and ultimately carrying the sin of the world on my shoulders, God, Father, if there's any other way, can we do that? In fact, Jesus is so passionate at this point, it says that he starts to sweat blood. It's horrible. It's actually a medical condition called hematidrosis, and what happens is the capillaries in a person's like forehead, they start to decompose, and the person literally starts to sweat blood, but it's associated with massive levels of stress. That's how you suffer with this condition, hematidrosis. And that's where Jesus is at in the garden. Three times he prays this. If there's any other way, can we do that? And three times God the Father's response is basically, there's no other way. There's no other way. And so Jesus says, well, agape love is about others. It's not just about me. And so Jesus goes to the cross. And Jesus dies for you and for me. Jesus takes our place because agape love does something. Agape love puts the other before me. And when Jesus says, I want you to love others as I have loved you, it's a love that puts other people ahead of ourselves. It's a love that continues to elevate others ahead of ourselves. Remember when I spoke before about how in the Roman culture, any unwanted children, they'd leave them out in the town square at a particular spot or they'd take them out in the woods? Do you know what the Christians did? Our forefathers and our foremothers did. When they found out about this, they would go to these locations and they would bring the children home and they would raise them as their own because love does something. They were demonstrating this love of another kind in a culture that didn't value and esteem love, in a culture that didn't understand the nature of agape. These Christians, they went out and they, even though it was another mouth for them to feed now, even though they weren't particularly flush with cash, they said, we have to demonstrate love because we've been the recipients of that love. And they took these kids home. The culture has changed these days, but Christians, when they're following after Jesus, when they're demonstrating this love of another kind, this agape love, they continue to put others ahead of themselves. And while it's not of the same kind of degree, I appreciate that, there's a group of people from this church here that they go up 300 metres up the road up to Niagara Park Public School each week, and they give an hour of their time each week to mentor children because there are some kids up the road here who are struggling right now. There are some kids who need a mature voice, a voice of Jesus, really, in that context. And so people, right through from our young adults all the way through to our seniors, they'll go up there each week and they'll mentor these kids. In fact, there is such transformation happening in the lives of these kids that the principal up there is saying, can you send more? Can you send more? We need more of these Jesus people. And I go, that's awesome. That's who we are. It's what we do. It's what we've been doing for centuries. Some of you next week are going out on BAM camp. And I'm, you know, I love BAM camp. I love what happens there. I love the transformation that I've seen in so many lives. But you may be aware that there were some free tickets that were available for those who had need. And that came as a result of some people in this church. They said, you know what? We want to express agape. We want to express love to young people who may not be able to afford to go to BAM camp this year. Just last Sunday, someone dropped, I think it was $1,200, and said, look, if there's any kid that needs help. Now, I don't even know who it was, but I just know that somebody dropped about $1,200 just last Sunday, I think it was, so that young people can go to BAM camp. Because that's what agape does. Love does something. Love does something. And it doesn't have to be the big things like, you know, like going up the school or dropping $1,200 and that sort of stuff. Agape affects every area of life. It affects how we relate to our siblings at home or to our parents or our kids at home. Agape love affects how when we're at work and the sort of person that we are at work and how we put others ahead of ourselves and how we express grace and forgiveness in our workplace. In every area of life, in every relationship, this love of another kind, this God-sourced, God-empowered love changes things because love does something. We have received this love and then we get the privilege of sharing this love with others. This kind of love is better than any of the sort of loves that were on the video clips earlier. It is a game changer. It has changed my life. And I know looking around the room, it's changed a whole lot of the lives of others in this space as well. And the greatest demonstration of that love from Jesus is when Jesus went to the cross. In fact, I'm going to ask Lewis if he'd come up here. We're going to share in communion in a few moments' time, and Lewis has agreed to just facilitate a bit of time when we remember Jesus' death. We remember the greatest demonstration of love that the world has ever seen. Thanks, buddy.
This has been a presentation from Narara Valley Baptist Church, a church that's desperate for God and passionate for people. To continue the conversation, we invite you to join us Sundays at 9:30 a.m. and 5 p.m. or on our website at www.nvbc.info.